found this in Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's a performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Commodore Aaron O'Brien.
Decker.
O'Brien.
You've got a hyphenated last name.
Yeah. I got married. Me and Decker got married.
Oh, and then you had that... what's his son's name?
William Decker?
William Decker.
Yeah.
William T. Decker. That sounds a lot like another name we know.
I know. Yeah. Well, welcome to the Synthaholics, and we are talking about the original episode Doomsday, but we wanted just to touch on the new news.
And
new
let's tell you who we are first, David.
I don't know. Who are we?
We are Synthaholics. You can find us at Synthaholics.com. If you want to follow us on Twitter, Synthaholic Duo. Me personally is David underscore J underscore Duncan.
I'm Blackbird2004 on Twitter.
And Guy is GS Davis Art. Yeah. And USS Tamerlan, and if you have iTunes and Stitcher and everything, subscribe.
We're available to all those, and also we're available for you to give us reviews and stars.
Because I mean, you don't know how much this helps the show. I mean, like, the more people that leave us ratings and reviews, the more visible we will be seen in the charts. So please review us, and we'll read the 5-star reviews on the air. As we get more of those, so, you know, you can hear the greatness from our voices, which you wrote in your voice.
Man, are you in luck today?
Yeah.
So all that's cool, but also it's cooler is that we got a leading lady for Star Trek Discovery.
Yes.
Walking Dead actress Sonqua Martin Green, and she...
I have no idea who she is.
She is one of the main... cast members for Walking Dead. She's been there. I don't know exactly what season she started in, but I think it was like fourth season.
I was talking to Robbie. He said she showed up in season 3, which is the season I quit on.
Okay,
but I think she was part of Jerome. No, not Jerome. What's his name? Tyrone. Yeah. Yeah. She's part of Tyrone's crew.
That's right.
And Tyrone's crew was so small, such a small part in season 3. Like, I totally tuned out.
They end up at the very end, and then they meet up with the main group for Walking Dead. But she's been there for quite a while, and she's a magnificent actress. She emotes a lot. Now, unfortunately, all I usually see from her on acting skills is... reacting to the horror that she's usually faced, and then the shell shock that she has to get over the insane horror. So there's a little bit of joy, there's a little bit this and there, but she plays a very deep character in Walking Dead, and it's been great. It's great that she's got this casting, because I think she has a lot of depth to her. So I'm hoping we're going to see a lot.
I mean, everyone's been saying that she's a fantastic actress, which is great. I just haven't seen her in anything. I did watch season 3 of Walking Dead, but I was just fed up with it because it was so slow. I just didn't continue
I know. We disagree about Walking Dead.
Well, and her group's part in season 3 was... If I remember right, it was very small.
It was, but then they get kind of like integrated into the main.
So I have very little remembrance of how she was. Everyone says she's wonderful, so I'm glad she's not.
Yeah, if it was somebody, actress. If I felt that she wasn't a great actress, I would definitely say. But she definitely has a lot of. She got good acting chops. She can show a lot of depth. It's a good thing.
And, you know, maybe we'll get to see her not sweaty and dirty and covered in zombie blood for once. So that'll be an interesting
Or
change.
Maybe. We don't know. And I just got
zombies
off
Zombies!
I just got off
Space!
I just got off the set of Walking Dead. No time for makeup!
Well, I mean, like, I guess she's not going to be that busy depending on the shooting schedule, because this is only going to be like a 13-episode arc. And if they keep it 13 episodes and she stays the main character, then...
Right. And then...
And they could always kill her in Walking Dead if she prefers doing Star Trek.
Well, and if they're filming now...
January is when they're supposed to start up in Toronto, I think.
Yeah. So if they're, you know, filming at this time, you know, they would definitely have enough time to get back to Georgia where they film Walking Dead, because I'm sure they don't want to do it in the middle of winter because they're mostly outside. So I don't know how their filming schedule is, but usually it's in the middle of summer.
They film in the middle of summer?
Well, around that time. Maybe not
that
summer, summer.
Miserable.
Oh, man. Have you seen them? They are literally sweating like crazy.
Yeah.
The only thing I always think about Walking Dead is, besides the zombies and everything and how they're going to get out of this situation or that situation, is like the BO has got to be awful.
I just can't imagine like shooting in summer in Atlanta. I live in Buffalo right now.
But, it's a sweat box.
But for you guys who don't know, I lived in the deep south most of my life. Never lived in Georgia, but I lived in Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, Texas. I know. Like, on a Sunday, when it's the middle of summer, you open your car door and you sit in your car, the air is, like, edible. Like, it's like arid jello. Yeah. Like, it's just disgusting, and it's hot, and it's miserable.
Mm-hmm. I don't know when they exactly filmed for Walking Dead, but I have seen them in the summertime.
I just thought they filmed like in the wintertime, so it's not as bad. And they might film in the winter, or maybe spray on sweat.
Maybe late spring or autumn. I mean, I have seen different seasons now, thinking back. I've seen different seasons for.
But the thing is, deep south, I mean, it really doesn't matter. I mean, like, when I visit my family in Texarkana, Texas, like, I can wear shorts in December. Like,
sure.
No, I mean, like, sometimes you do have to bundle up. I mean, it does get cold. Mm-hmm. Like, it'll hit the 30s and stuff like that. But sometimes you can, you know, just walk right out of shorts in December, and it's nice.
Well, now you're happy that you've downloaded this episode and we've got into the Georgia weather system. So,
just the deep south weather system.
Well, anyways, it's good news. I'm happy to hear it. I'm happy to see that we've got a pretty decent acting, actress coming into this to take on this heavy role.
It was funny because this episode will be coming out around the 27th of December, but like we're recording it earlier. I recorded with Guy last week and I was like, there's got to be a whole bunch of new casting announcements soon because they're supposed to be, you know, filming in January. So, I mean, and like literally like the day after I recorded with Guy, that news came out. So it's just how it happens.
I know. We're sorry. We can't bring these fast enough to you. Well, this
episode will be more soon.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm sure we're going to get a lot more very, very soon. We're going to get a whole much more information, too, because they'll start leaking stuff to us. This episode, we are talking about the original series, The Doomsday Machine. This first aired October 30th, 1967.
Wow, that's kind of like an interesting Halloween episode. And I mean, like, it's not scary, I guess, but it's like definitely the music's haunting.
Oh, it's great.
The music in this episode has stuck with me forever.
Yeah, like when he's going into the Doomsday Machine in the shuttlecraft.
Like that music, like I think that's my earliest memory of Star. I want to say that's probably my earliest memory of Star Trek.
It's powerful.
Because that music is so memorable. It's really basic, but it's just like it's the theme. It's just like
right.
You only need a strong couple notes for a strong theme, and it's there.
Well, yeah. So this is season 2, episode 6, and this is definitely one of my favorites of the original series. It's just so fun to watch. It's
right up there with Arena.
Yeah. But there's not enough. I don't know if it's Arena, but it's not. There's nothing that you really gotta like. There's not much to think about. It's just a great like adventure film. It's not that cerebral. It's just, you know, I mean, there's a little like, you know, Kirk wax poetic at the very end, but that's about it. You know,
it's just like, oh yeah, my good friend had died. It's fun. Like I just love how nonchalant they are about people dying.
This is life in space. Just gotta deal with it. So,
Or I guess you were just so miffed at him trying to take over a ship he didn't care that
I would be a little
died.
Pissed off, too.
He's like, I'm glad that sucker's dead.
I'd be like your friend taking your car and driving it into dumpsters and stuff like that. You know, like, what are you doing?
It's like your spare car.
No, that's my car. It's my Maserati. So the episode starts off, we get Lieutenant Palmer, who is
communication. Not played by Cat Roberts now.
But not
I mean, then.
We
he
don't.
Split by Cat Roberts now.
But we don't get Uhura. She's missing in action. She must be on shore leave somewhere. Gone.
Riza.
Yeah.
She's got her Horgon out. She's getting some action.
So she gets a distress beacon and it's from the constellation, and there's lots of space interference, so they're going to check that out. When they get to the star system, they find that all seven planets of the system have been destroyed and smashed to rubble. And they go to the next system, and they find that there once were healthy planets, they seem to be destroyed as well, except for the two inner planets. And that's where they find Enterprise finds her the other ship, the USS Constellation, that's being commanded by Commodore Matt Decker. It's just a lifeless hulk floating in space, and they go in to investigate.
I think this episode, I haven't watched all the original series on Netflix.
Shame
all the
you.
Way through.
Shame on you.
I mean, I've seen all the episodes, but I mean, like, I gotta imagine this is probably one of the ones that's heaviest on the new CG, as far as for like the redoing the special. I mean, they redid all the special effects, but I mean, this episode is probably one of the more effects heavy episodes of Star Trek.
Wonderfully done. I'm glad they redid it.
And seeing the constellation all broken up, its nacelle all messed up.
It's great. It's just great. Everything's about it's great. What was great even as a kid with the old effects was that it's suddenly you're like, oh, there are other ships just like the Enterprise, and there's other people in the fleet. And,
I also love how it's like 10-17, so it's still the same numbers as 1701.
Yeah.
So they just messed the numbers around a little bit.
I was like,
that's how they can.
I was just gaga about it. I was like, great. I mean, we do see other other Constellation class starships during, was it Operation Annihilate?
Yeah, I think so.
The Ultimate Computer is where we get a whole bunch of other, where they fight against the computer for Daystrom, who puts on the robot computer to control the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. And they go against three other Constellation ships. But, I mean, it still is cool, and it's idea that, that could happen to the Enterprise. You know, the vulnerability.
Sure, yeah.
There's like all your mind just goes through all these like loops of like, oh, that's cool.
Enterprise is powerful. How did that happen?
Yeah, yeah. So it's pretty cool. So we get that. That's where it starts off, and then they check out the constellation. They have some reserve energy banks. There's some limited life support systems. So they decide to go down and investigate. So McCoy, Scotty, and a damage control party along with Kirk goes on, and then Spock stays and takes command of the Enterprise. They go down and they obviously poke around the constellation, where they come across Commodore Decker alone in the auxiliary control room.
And very catatonic.
Completely catatonic. And we find out that what the basis of this story is going to be is that they ran into a giant robot planet killer that's floating out in space and destroying planets. And when
bugles, lots of bugles,
when
it's the biggest bugle ever,
biggest bugle, it's the motherload of bugles inside. There's so many bugles. This is where they make bugles.
Yeah, it's.
But
they destroy planets and then they spit them, and then they spit out bugles.
Bugles.
They poop out bugles.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What a wonderful world we live in. So we get the lowdown from Decker when he kind of comes to. He's obviously upset. He beamed his crew down, all 400 members, onto one of the planets below, trying to save them because the ship was finished and was pretty much figured that they're all going to die on the ship. Unfortunately,
he
beamed down the planet.
Did you not notice this thing destroys planets before you decided to beam them down?
Unfortunately, to Decker and his crew, that the planet eater went to that planet and chopped that planet up and apparently just...
The planet four. There is no planet four. Don't you think I know that?
Don't you think I know that? There was... But there's not anymore.
There's 400 of them.
It's.
They were crying to me. I couldn't do anything.
All I'm going to say is, if you have not seen this episode, you need to turn off this podcast and go and watch it. This episode is just great.
Fantastic episode.
It's so great. It's one of the golden moments of the original series.
Very much. It's so
great.
It's probably like top five TOS.
Mm-hmm.
Easy.
I love this episode so much. And so from there, they decide McCoy beams back with Decker, and Kirk and Scotty and the crew are the landing party crew are going to try to get the ship somewhat working. The warp core is completely junked. The impulse engines, he has to cross circuit with the warp the warp controls. So yeah. He's messing all around this crossing circuits. Kirk is trying to get
Scotty's wet dream.
Yeah. I've been waiting for this day, Captain.
You can't do it with the Enterprise, but
you're such a good captain. I never have to fix the engines too often.
Or cross circuit things.
So Kirk is trying to get the ship's visual functions and communications. And during this whole time, there's like a big subspace jamming frequency that's being emitted by the Doomsday Machine. Now, they haven't seen the Doomsday Machine quite yet. So when McCoy and Decker beam aboard the Enterprise, all of a sudden they get on the Enterprise and hear red alert, and they run up to the bridge, and unfortunately the Planet Killer is right there bearing down on the Enterprise. And this is where they take some action against the Planet Killer, but it's ineffective, and Matt Decker decides he's going to have another go at it, trying to take the Planet Killer out.
I was wrong last time. I didn't go close enough to the thing that can destroy planets.
Right.
Because phasers somehow hurt worse if you're point blank. I'm pretty sure that's not how physics works.
And we have this great dynamic where basically Commodore Decker takes over the Enterprise using regulations, saying, I'm the ranking flag officer.
Yeah. And Spock and Decker shooting regulations back at each other.
Right. And McCoy, you know, is saying you can't let him do this. And he says, you could say that he can't do it if he's mentally incompetent, if you so deem so. And he says, I'll do that right here, right now.
And he's like, you also have to provide your medical records to support this. It's like, damn it.
He says, you know, I haven't had enough time to evaluate him yet, you know. And it's like, well, then it would be false. And, you know. So it's a great scene between all three of them, and Decker kicks off McCoy because McCoy's making too much of a problem on the bridge. And you can see, Spock, you can see he doesn't like it, but he's sort of like shutting down to computer level. He's just going to calculate everything in his head. He's not going to show any, emotion whatsoever. But you can see there's still an emotion there.
I don't like you. You're just gonna run us into the ground like your ship. I saw what you did to your ship.
Yeah.
No keys for you.
So meanwhile, back on the Constellation, Kirk
is an engineer. Yeah, I don't think Kirk ever does anything technical ever.
Well, we do see him. No, we see him here and there. He gets under the council and does a little this and that. But
I see he's done it with Spock a couple times. Like, you need to fix that. But I don't think
Spock,
he's like,
just fix it. Jeez.
I don't think he's been like super hands on with it until this.
No,
episode.
Not too often. But you know, he is the captain, so he's got a lot of people to do that for him. But so he's down there. He's getting his hands dirty, and they get. They get the view screen working, and he sees that the Enterprise is engaging with the Doomsday Machine, and he's like, what is going on? Like, how is this happening?
Enterprise, come in! Enterprise, come in now!
Unfortunately,
anybody!
Unfortunately, he can't get through.
Even Yeoman Rand, please, anybody answer me at this point.
Yeah. Please, Yeoman. But so he can't get through to him, and Scotty ends up getting the engines working eventually, and then he says, now if we can only have some phasers.
And the guy's like, oh yeah, I worked on those first, actually.
I've been recharging the phasers. And there's a great line, he goes, Scotty, you just earned your pay for the week. I used to love that as a kid when I heard him say that. It's like, I love when he says that stuff to him.
I should have played Starfleet Signs My Check as the opening.
So they take a couple shots at the Doomsday Machine. The Doomsday Machine starts bearing down on the Constellation. He says, now that's great, Scotty. Now let's get us out of here, because they're basically coming right after the Doomsday Machine is coming at the Constellation. And then the Enterprise comes back and starts firing at it. So
it weakens it enough to need to nom on some more planets. So yeah. Kirk is safe and Decker's.
And it veer off to another planet. And they discover that the trajectory of the Doomsday Machine is actually going into the heart of the most populated area of the Federation space. And
Ryza, where Uhura is,
whatever it takes, we have to save Ryza. But they realize they have to do something. Now Spock's of the mind that we should get out of there, pick up the captain, Scotty, get out of there, and then
regroup, tell the fleet, do something intelligent.
Yeah, tell the fleet what's going on. Of course, Decker, who's now taking command of the Enterprise, just says, we got to take more shots at this. We got to really take this thing out.
This hull is impenetrable. How do you How do you not understand impenetrable?
He doesn't get it. You know, he like, thinks that if he has like, the constellation.
I've never had a problem with women. I can penetrate anything.
Oh, jeez. Man, that guy's in trouble. So Decker basically does not want to hear anything that Spock has to say. At the same time, Kirk and crew, they're trying to get the ship. They got the ship basically running, but they want to get contact back to the Enterprise, and they want to get that kind of like what's going on. Why is, you know, because Decker keeps engaging with the planet.
And Kirk's like, "Don't mess up my ship. Planet. It's mine. I have to mess it up, not you."
Right. Well, so when they finally do get through, Kirk's like, "So you're the jackass who's been attacking that thing?" You know, like, "What are you, out of your mind?" So he tells Kirk, blast regulations or blazes with regulations, you know. He says,
"I don't want you commanding my ship, Spock. I order you to take a
command. Under my personal authority of the Enterprise, you are to take command of the from Commodore Decker." And so Decker,
"You wouldn't dare."
Oh, it's a great scene where he kicks basically Decker out of the captain's seat. Spock takes over, veers off, and goes to pick up Kirk and Scotty and the crew on the Constellation, and he tells Decker that he's due for a medical exam with Dr. McCoy. Decker goes down and jumps one of his guards.
Jumps the red shirt. Man, he probably kills that guy, too.
He beat the crap out of that red shirt. And then he goes and jumps into the shuttle bay, steals a shuttlecraft, and is taking off to destroy the planet killer in the shuttlecraft because that's going to work.
Because, yeah, shuttlecraft are the most powerful weapons in the entire universe.
So, obviously, Sulu alerts Spock that this has been happening.
Why is there no security? Why are there no safeguards on shuttle bays? Like, this happens in original series. This happens all the time. All the time.
They're always stealing shuttlecrafts.
In Next Generation.
They beam down.
Like, a kid. Like, there's a couple times, like, I think when Wesley's going to the Starfleet Academy test or something, one of his friends, who's also a kid, steals a shuttlecraft. Yeah. Why is it so easy to take a shuttlecraft off? How do you have authority to open the doors?
I imagine they have some kind of hack, and when they find out. But it's like, you know, like, Sulu goes to Spock, goes, "Mr. Spock, somebody's opening the shuttle bay and taking a shuttlecraft," and he goes, "Shut the shuttle bay doors, Mr. Sulu."
It's too late.
It's too late. I'm like, dude, what? Why?
Like, shouldn't there be like codes or like, shouldn't there be like multiple passwords?
Shouldn't there be locks? Like, just yeah, like, padlocks.
Because, I mean, that's an extreme vulnerability.
Yeah.
Because the shuttle bay door on the Enterprise is huge.
It happens all the time.
It's huge.
And I'll only say that maybe Decker has like some like, great
super
code that he can like just
sure. I mean, I guess it's a little bit more realistic that Decker could do it.
He is a Commodore. He outranks Captain Kirk.
Sure. I mean, I guess I can see how Commodore, but it keeps happening. It seems like there should be like ship specific lockouts for.
There's a whole,
and only senior staff should know how to open the shuttle bay doors.
There's a whole Starfleet lobby trying to get more security for the shuttle bay doors on starships. Because,
like, you know, I mean, I'm surprised there hasn't been.
Has this happened to you? Has somebody got on your ship and stealing a shuttlecraft?
Stolen a shuttlecraft? Oh, I mean, they should. I mean, like, As easy it is to take a shuttlecraft and leave, I'm surprised there haven't been more Star Trek episodes about people like secretly landing on the shuttle bay to try to take over the Enterprise.
Yeah,
because I mean, if they can just have one guy on the inside who can just open up the doors, you could easily invade the Enterprise.
Seems like it happened all the time in Archer's Enterprise. Seems like people are always getting on the ship somehow. They're just like, "Oh, we're on the ship." Like,
how did you get on the damn ship? Well, I guess they just had a bunch of hatches that just said, you know, twist to open.
Yeah.
no computer console to lock the door. just twist to open.
Just like a submarine.
Exactly.
Like a wheel.
Just a big wheel.
Pressurized door. So, anyways, Decker takes off with the shuttlecraft. Kirk and Spock are begging him to come back, but he says, "I'm going to fly the shuttlecraft right down
its throat."
Yeah, he's going to ram it right down its throat and kill himself and blow up the planet killer. Kirk pleads with him, "Don't do this." And there's a great sequence where Decker is flying into the mouth of the planet killer.
He is like the king of overacting.
He is very overacting, and
like, Like, I mean, like, I guess he's trying to sell it, and I guess it's a product of the 60s. But at the same time, he's definitely overacting. But it's also,
I love it.
It's also not bad.
It's not bad. It's doable, because you're like
he's a pro at overacting. He's overacting, but he's doing it in such a way where it works.
Well, not only that, but so he's flying into this thing, and he's like got this like. I mean, you think about it. If you're going to fly into your death, like, what kind of, like, balls of steel do you need?
I've got balls of steel. Balls,
I mean, really.
Balls,
I mean,
balls.
I mean, you're flying into the your own death, into this big fiery mouth of this planet killer. And, you know, how do you keep yourself from not, like, I don't know. It's pretty crazy if you think about it. You know you're going to die.
He is not fit for duty.
You are not fit for duty.
But he is totally committed to taking that thing down.
Yeah, yeah, for
like,
sure.
Like, he's not messing around.
Well, he goes in, and obviously the shuttlecraft is destroyed. But Sulu notes with Spock that, hey, it didn't seem to do any damage.
It flinched!
But it definitely saw power, some power shortage after that happened.
And Spock double-checks his work, because Spock always has to double-check the work.
He, you know, did the math, like, yep, you're right.
You're right. It's negligible, but it did hurt a little bit.
So, meanwhile, Enterprise is picking up Scotty and the landing party on the Constellation. Kirk asks Scotty to stay behind, and he gets inspired by Decker's last actions. And what he decides to do is he has the impulse engines wired to explode. Scotty says, I'm barely keeping these things from exploding.
It's like, you know, these things are made to explode.
Yeah, which I thought was hilarious. He says, it won't take much. He's like, I can barely keep it together now. So he has a button set up that it gets a 30-second delay. He presses the button, and, of course, the ship will explode. So what Kirk plans to do is he's going to fly the Constellation into the mouth of the planet killer with a bigger destructive force than the small shuttlecraft. And Scotty does that. He beams aboard the Enterprise. Unfortunately, at the last minute, the transporter starts messing
up. I love how it shoots up plumes of smoke from each of the different transporter pads.
Just to let you know.
But it's like, yes, this thing is not working. I almost kind of wish they did that in TNG. There's like giant plumes of smoke that come out.
Yeah, we don't see a lot of plumes of smoke in TNG, do we?
Well, not from the transporter pad anyway.
No, yeah, not there. Scotty's trying. He says, "I got to fix."
They saved it all for the weird blue aliens with that thing on their chest. They just breathe that smoke.
Oh yeah, I forgot about those guys.
I kind of wish there was only like two of them.
They never showed up again.
Maybe they'll be in Star Trek Discovery.
Maybe. So
maybe our lead will fall in love with one, a female one, and then it'll be weird.
Yeah. Who knows? So we got.
I can't kiss you. That thing on your chest is like. In the way.
Just awkward.
It's like in your face. Like, how do I engage with you? I'll take it off of you, baby.
I'm suffocating.
I'm dying.
So, getting back on topic, Dave's bizarre sexual fantasies. The Enterprise beams up Scotty. Obviously, Scotty's trying to fix the transporter pad that malfunctioned. And once he does, he says, I don't know how long it's going to hold, but let's get him over as fast as I can. So Kirk starts, Spock tells Kirk, hey, we only got a few minutes. You better get over here as fast as you can. So Kirk starts running towards the planet killer, waiting for the last couple seconds to hit that button so I'll self-destruct.
Because it's only a 30-second fuse.
30 seconds. You could have done a minute.
Come on. You should have done a little bit longer than 30 seconds, Kirk.
So he's flying into it, and once finally he's close enough, he's like, 500 miles away or less,
yeah.
He hits the button. It's flying right into the mouth of the planet killer. And he's like, okay, beam me up. And then, again, the transporter room starts blowing.
Scotty's got to go to the Jeffries tube and start. He's like, I got to rig it up. And then it's still blowing.
Still, and yeah. he gets up there and he's doing it. And I love Spock. It's sort of like, Mr. Scott. Mr. Scott.
It's like, Mr. Scott, try this. It's like, he's offering him engineering advice.
He's like, how could, it's just hilarious that he's hounding him.
And, he's like, I can't concentrate.
But fortunately, Scotty does get the transporter room working for that second. They beam up Kirk.
At the very last second.
Very last second. the Constellation flies into the Doomsday Machine and blows up, and the destructive force of the Constellation blowing up within the Doomsday Machine renders the Doomsday Machine basically inert. Mm-hmm. It doesn't destroy, it just kind of floats off into space and is a dead. And, you know, Kirk basically, like I said at the very end, wax poetic about the hydrogen bombs.
Hydrogen, yeah. You know.
Which was like kind of dated now, because hydrogen bombs are, of course, extremely destructive, but not as destructive as our massive megaton destructive forces of nuclear missiles.
You've got Russia with the Tsar Bomba, where that's not even the most powerful one. They've got the Tsar Bomba 2, basically. But the Tsar Bomba 1, when they drop that bomb on that big island that Russia has above it that no one lives on, like, they almost destroyed the plane they were in.
Wow.
And the shockwave was felt as far away as, like, Finland and Norway and stuff like that.
Right.
And the shockwave technically orbited the Earth, like, 3 times before it dissipated. But it was, like, it broke windows as far away as...
How,
like,
many megatons was that? Do you know?
I don't remember. But it was... the Tsar Bomba is disgusting. And the Tsar Bomba 2 is even more disgusting, because it, not only is it more powerful than the first Tsar Bomba, it's also... a stealth bomb. So, like, we couldn't, like, we probably won't be able to track it if they decided to use Tsar Bomba on us. And, like, say we live in Buffalo, we're like 7 hours driving from New York City. If they dropped this bomb on New York City, we would be screwed. Like it, the shockwave may not, like may not kill us, but, like, it will screw up our city.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because we are in Buffalo at a time back in the 50s and 60s, it was definitely noted that through intelligence that the Russia was definitely going to drop a bomb in Buffalo. And I guess it was the location of the bomb was supposedly, this is what I've heard, I've never confirmed this, was Sheridan and Niagara Falls Boulevard.
Why Buffalo?
Buffalo at the time was pretty populated, and there was a lot of steel production at the time. Here, you know, we had Bethlehem Steel, we had the power plants.
I guess we're not a big target anymore, but New York City would probably be.
New York City is gone, a
target.
And, oh yeah,
but if they use a Tsar Bomba on it, we will be, if not dead, we will be really messed up.
See, my only thing is, if I was going to be in a nuclear destructive thing, I want to be at ground zero. I don't want to go through the fallout.
You don't want to be where the aftershock hits you.
I just want to have be vaporized in like a second, like just like a split second, just gone. I know it'll suck for that second, but I don't have to live with the aftermath and nuclear fallout, winter, you know, the roving bands of cannibals and all everything else that's going to happen.
The Mad Max people.
Yeah, I don't have it in me, you know? I just camp out. If I knew where it was, it's like, oh, nuclear destruction? Let's camp out right here.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. But, like, yeah, like if they, I mean... I mean, and Finland, and that's way, way, way further away from this island than we are to New York City. I mean, we would be in serious trouble if Tsar Bomba hit anywhere, you know, in any state adjacent to us.
Well, not just that, but, you know, what would, even if you
even,
weren't...
Even if it landed in D.C., like, we would still feel the effects of a Tsar Bomba in Buffalo. It is insane how insanely powerful these weapons are.
Oh, and you know that the United States has crazy weapons like that sitting.
Yeah. I don't know if we've got as big as megatons, but we've got enough of them. I mean, between both of us, we can nuke the world dead, like, you know, 6 times over.
Right.
But
right.
It's just Russia can use less bombs doing it.
Right, right. No, for sure. But, so anyways, that's...
That's our dark, bleak New Year's, you know.
Well, I just wanted to bring up
thoughts,
that, you
for
know,
you guys.
We're you know, by the time you get this, we're like probably a couple days away from Trump becoming inaugurated as president. You know, anything can happen. Just be ready. He might build the planet eater,
the planet killer. Oh, the giant Pringle.
So
the Pringle, the Bugle. Sorry.
Before we get even darker,
well, we're gonna go darker.
Oh yeah. We're going to go nice and dark here. So what are we? What's your thoughts about this episode now that we've kind of recapped the whole thing?
It's just such a classic.
Could be a movie. Like,
it really could be a movie. Like, I almost kind of hope Star Trek IV is kind of about the planet killer, because it really could be a movie. I'd love to see maybe more than
that
just
would be
one
sweet.
Ship.
That would be sweet.
It's just,
I'm going to tweet Simon Pegg.
Yes,
I am
Planet Killer. Well, the thing is, like, I've only read a couple Star Trek novels, but there's a novel called Before Dishonor. It involves Spock, Seven of Nine, and the Planet Killer, mm-hmm. and the Borg. And this book is fantastic because the Borg come to invade, and they think the Planet Killer can, like, you know, be a good weapon against the Borg. So Seven of Nine and Spock try to go reactivate the Planet Killer because I think they towed it into Federation space. It's like in a museum, like next to the original Enterprise. I think a space museum. Like it's insane. It's pretty funny that they just, like, you know, saved it, and the book to me was really funny because at one point the Borg come through and they destroy Pluto, and then someone says, "Oh, that's not a planet anymore." Oh yeah, we reinstituted it as a planet later, because the thing is, we've deemed Pluto not a planet.
Yeah, it's a dwarf planet now.
Yeah, it's not a real planet. So like, I think it's funny that, like, even Star Trek they're kind of referencing. Oh yeah, we redeemed it a planet later on.
Right.
Like as a joke, I'm like, really? Like
they threw that in there.
I just thought that was funny to have in a book where they're like, oh yeah, Pluto's a planet again, and then the Borg destroy it. So oh well, goodbye Pluto.
Well. And then what happens when the Borg assimilates the Planet Killer? So
I think I can't remember exactly. Like, for some reason, the Pluto part sticks out to me more than what they did with the Borg. I think they stopped the Borg with the Planet Killer. But then the books, there's three books that come directly after it, the Destiny Trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
In the Destiny Trilogy, those three books deal about the origin of the Borg and the end of the Borg. And it's got Ezri Dax in it. It's got Riker on his ship. It's got Picard on his ship. And it's got Erica Hernandez, the in XO2 captain, the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. I mean, not the Enterprise, but the Columbia.
Oh.
From Enterprise. You see her in a couple episodes. She's also in it.
Hmm.
So, like, it involves so much Star Trek, and it's a trilogy. It's a Destiny trilogy. It's really, really good. It deals with the origins and the demise of the Borg. And I know technically the books aren't canon. They're, like, memory beta material.
Right.
Not memory alpha, but they're really good. Like, those four books, because they pretty much run in a sequence, Before Dishonor and the Destiny trilogy.
That never bothers me so much.
I highly recommend those. They're a lot of fun.
As long as it's... you know, engages you, spurs your imagination, makes you, like, you know, some sort of enjoyment. I mean, I don't really care if it's canon or not. You know, I just enjoy a good story.
Yeah.
I enjoy a good yarn.
Yeah. Yeah, but those are the only four Star Trek books I've read, but I definitely recommend them to anybody who's interested in reading Star Trek. And, you know, in this one, you know, Before Dishonor deals with the Planet Killer. It is really cool because you've got Spock and Seven of Nine and the Planet Killer and the Borg.
Right.
And then you've got the trilogy that follows it where, like, it's got almost everybody from Star Trek.
It's awesome.
Because it spans the origin of the Borg to the demise of the Borg.
Right.
It's fantastic.
Well, I love this episode so damn much. There's nothing about this episode I hate. There's literally nothing I hate. This is just one of those episodes. I'm a huge original series fan.
It is like a perfect episode.
It's everything you want for a sci-fi, for Star Trek, and, you know, Kirk's at his best. Spock is at his best. I mean, even Scotty's great. I mean, everybody's there. The only person who's not there, unfortunately, is... Uhura, and we don't have Chekhov. There's two people missing.
Is this season two?
Season two. But
okay, yeah, so Chekhov.
For some reason, they just didn't show up on this episode. I don't know if they were on vacation.
Well, I think it's cool to have, you know, Lieutenant Palmer's. You know, I mean, to have a B crew.
Maybe. She shows up in a couple of... This Way to Eden is that way. She's in that episode, and she also does the voice of the companion during Metamorphosis.
Gotcha.
So she's that voice. So okay. she has a little Trek, you know.
Sure.
Creds.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it.
But this episode's fantastic. It's cool to see a B crew every now and then.
I love it. Yeah, I love to see different.
It makes it feel like it's more like a real ship, because TNG didn't feel as real because you just had, like, the main people all the time.
Well, there's two things, obviously. What is it? Lower Decks, was the one.
With, sure, yeah, but where it was like season six.
Yeah, you saw like the different all the ensigns, and they don't know what the hell's going on, which is a great idea. And then the other one was I forgot what season it was, but Data taking like the third shift of command.
Oh yeah,
where
yeah,
he basically when everyone's asleep, he just runs the bridge and he has like the third shift. Everyone's you know whoever's filling in
until he decides that dreaming is a good thing he should do, and he quits the third shift so he can just waste time dreaming as a robot. Does Data dream of electric sheep?
Could be. I bet he's programmed for that.
That'd be funny if that's what he dreamed about. The guy knew the saying, "Do robots dream of electric sheep?"
And that's all he dreams about.
Yeah, he programmed that into him.
I want to dream about something else. I want a cake, a peptide cake,
cellular peptide cake that looks like the Anna Troy, but flat chested, which is really weird.
I love
I think that cake should have definitely.
That's a great episode too.
Not been as flat.
Well, yeah. So, Doomsday Machine. If you haven't seen it, definitely watch it. If you are, you know, if you have seen it, watch it again because it is just a golden episode. I can't think of a better. I mean, there's a couple obviously original series, but original series you vacillate
know,
from
you know Space Seed Arena.
City on the Edge.
City on the Edge forever. Like, I mean, yeah. There's like a handful of ones that are just.
Yeah, there's about five or six amazing episodes that there's.
This is one of them.
They're almost flawless. This is a flawless episode. And you get the full dynamic of the crew. You get the full dynamic of what Star Trek is about. And it's great. It's just, I can't say enough good things about this episode. It's just fun to watch. There's nothing to really make fun of. You know, like Galloway 7, we make fun of the commissioner's cape, okay, you know, yeah. But I mean, it's like, there's stuff like that, but there's really not much.
And Decker overacts, but he overacts to the point where it's still kind of good.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird. It's really, really weird how he overacts.
He does overact a lot. And I read that he was not aware of the parallels of Moby Dick and that he was technically Captain Mayhab. So when acting this, he didn't have that in mind. So that's interesting that this still plays out the Captain Ahab story, and he didn't even have this in mind. So
that's really funny. I didn't think about that.
He says, I didn't think about it until like I read an article like years later about the episode, and I was like, oh, how is it technically Ahab?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get that, you know, so.
His white bugle.
That's my white bugle. I've been chasing it for years. So, yeah, great episode. I love the idea that like an ultimate doomsday destructive machine that's kind of like outlived its civilization is out there just destroying the universe slowly, gnawing away at it, you know, in the depths of space. It's a great idea, isn't it? Just that there's just this machine that's destroying.
That's like almost unstoppable.
Like Galactus type.
Yeah. Thing,
you know, just eating planets, you know, like what's worse? I mean, it's like the Death Star.
At least with Galactus, you could like talk to it. Like, yeah. But the Planet Killer, it's just. It's
no, there's nothing. It's a mindless, you know, drone that's just going out there.
Eats planets, kills.
Yeah.
It's almost like, I feel like, you know, this is like the progenitor to the crystalline entity.
Exactly.
Where the crystalline entity doesn't chop the planet up.
Yeah.
It just takes all life off the planet, which is almost as bad, if not worse, because it's leaving like the Rock Hulk, but it's just eating everything alive.
Yeah, or the Borg, how they just strip out planets when they want to. Great idea, man. It just fires your imagination about like Spock says. I hope there's not more of those out there. He goes,
that would be cool. I'd love to see them.
Kirk goes, I found one quite sufficient.
yeah. And that's when he starts waxing.
I love Kirk wax. Always has like this little like, you know, devil may care smirk at the end of everything. He's like, you know, I found white one quite sufficient.
Yeah, it is. That's the point where I'm like, he just like, wow, you just really don't care that your friend died.
And that you almost did not beam up from the constellation. Like, literally, like...
Like, you are not scarred by that in the
5 minutes ago. That's what's great about Kirk, is that would happen. And he's like, yeah, I made it. So, great. Oh, man, great episode. And, I can't imagine anybody seeing this episode and not just being, like, in love with Star Trek or having some kind of fascination with it. It's one of those episodes I definitely want people to see if they're going to see the original series.
Sure, yeah. It's for sure one of the ones. You don't tell people to watch the original series and say, hey, watch The Impact.
No. Don't watch Impasse. Strike that from your memory. Don't ever watch the Impasse.
The Impasse.
There's so many sketchy or goofy original series that are out there.
Wolf of the Fold.
Wolf of the Fold's a hard one. Yeah.
It had some parts that
could have been good, but it just kind of
gets
bogged down. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of them, they're like that. But this episode is not one of them.
Oh, this is as perfect as like a 1967 episode of television there possibly could be.
So when everyone hears this, we are on the cusp of 2017, or if not, you're already 2017 when you're hearing this. Dave, do you feel a doomsday for our upcoming 2017, or you think we're going to be okay?
You see, there's this thing called Murphy's Law.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm familiar with Mr. Murphy.
I don't like Mr. Murphy has kicked both our ass all year long.
This has been a rough year,
2016. But the thing is, like, I don't want to tempt Murphy by saying it can't get any worse. Please, nobody out there say it can't get worse, because Murphy will be like, "Hold my beer," and he'll wreck 2017. Worse than he directed 2016. Yeah. Like, 2016 is a terrible year. I'm reluctant. Like I said, I don't want to say it can't get any worse, because if you say that, it will get worse. So I will tentatively hope that 2017 is a better year, but I will be skeptical.
With that said, I'm always optimistic. I try to stay optimistic no matter what. I'm hoping with the new news of Discovery with, Martin Green as the leader of the cast, I hope that this is going to be awesome, because she is great. I am scared of her political climate, but I'm not going to get into that, so I'm scared of that. But I can't imagine there'd be any more deaths. I mean, as long as Shatner doesn't die in 2017.
And he's coming to Nickel City Con in Buffalo.
I know. In May.
In May. So we're so excited to be in the same room with him, maybe. Come May.
Who knows? Well, that's all it comes down to, is that I'm hoping that 2017 won't suck, but 2016 was not easy.
No,
for anybody.
It was not. I mean, so many great actors died this year, musicians, like it's just I mean, the one good death was Fidel Castro. I mean,
we lost that monster.
We lost that monster, but he died the same day as Ron Glass. So
it's weird, because I was reading that the Cuba, they found like a possible vaccine for cancer, and I always felt like that. Like, is this like civilization? Like, they unlocked some kind of
a great leader has died. We've unlocked an amazing potential.
Yeah. Amazing potential, and then we found out about that. You know, that they unlocked that potential. You know, so it's like that's the only thing I could think about when I read that article, is like, they possibly might have a vaccine for cancer. If that's even close to true,
it's probably tobacco. That would be amazing. That Cuban cigar tobacco is like the cure for cancer.
Tobacco cures cancer.
Yes. It would be amazing.
No, but
because I mean, you know, they make it with snakes. I mean, they make anti-venom from the venom.
No,
right?
That's true.
So
but,
I mean, I think they'll be amazing.
But people get people get breast cancer. People get like, you know, skin cancer.
Sure, but it would still be amazing if
there was
somehow Cuban tobacco was like the key to
some tie into that. Yeah, but yeah, no, it's just so that's a promising lead in 2017, and we also, like I said, we've got Star Trek Discovery, which I'm excited about, and I think there's a lot of good things on the horizon. I'm still dubious, because 2016. Has kicked my ass thoroughly, and I'm trying to do the best I can to be like, yeah, it's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay. We'll survive.
We're going to be okay, guys.
I will survive.
So, yeah. So we are wishing everyone a happy new year.
A happy new year, a merry Christmas, a happy holidays if you don't celebrate Christmas, a happy...
Crazy Kwanzaa.
Yeah, Crazy Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, whatever it is you celebrate, if you go to a Chinese restaurant on Christmas Day, that's awesome. Eat those cats.
A Festivus for the rest of us.
If you like watching The Christmas Story, you know, all day long on Christmas, you know, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously Christmas, while you're getting this, it probably just passed over the weekend. We hope you survived your family and,
hope you watch Star Trek Generations so you can see Picard with his Tiny Tim son next to the Christmas tree.
I love you, Papa.
Oh, man. I love you too, Tiny Tim.
Could they get any cuter of a little kid? Like, so Tiny Tim.
Never get older, Tiny Tim.
Yeah, yeah.
In the Nexus, he would never grow up.
Yeah, stay that age forever in the Nexus. Yeah, great. We hope you had a great time with that. It's we enjoy having this time that we could get together with you and, you know, share Star Trek.
Share Star Trek, share with your friends, Star Wars, family, and everything. And yeah, Star Wars Rogue One just came out. We actually recorded with the Nerdy Nomicon, which...
Check that out.
It'll probably be out by the time you hear this. So yeah, check out the Nerdy Nomicon. Our friends, Robbie Palmer from Artful Gremlins, that's their show. And you'll be able to hear our take on that. And later we will be doing our own take on Synthaholics of Rogue One in January with Guy Davis and Troy from they do a podcast together called Rocky Mountain Geek Tank.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be
teaming up.
We'll do another cross podcast thing for our non-Trek episode of the month.
It's going to be great. We had a fun time with them. I enjoyed Rogue One. I hope everyone else gets a chance. And by the time you hear Rogue One commentary and thoughts, that you have seen it and you can, you know, tune in without spoilers.
Sure. But, you know, spoilers anyway, because we will not hold back.
No. I won't say anything now. Just I'll give people a little bit of time.
Sure. Yeah. Got a couple weeks.
This is your warning.
Rogue One is coming.
Yeah.
It's like the Planet Killer. You can't stop it.
Anyways, anything else we want to add about Doomsday 2017 and anything else?
Doomsday. You know, 2016 was the Doomsday machine for us, so hopefully 2017 will not be.
Be the flower.
Hopefully it'll be the Genesis for us.
Yes. Genesis!
Genesis!
Genesis, Planet Forbidden, is not!
I love that guy. They need to do, like, you know, they did the Rogue One, A Star Wars Story.
Please.
They need to do, like, a Star Trek story and have a movie about
him. I'll shoot myself in the head. I hate that guy.
He's like the Star Trek Yoda.
He's memorable,
but with really bushy eyebrows. And like, he's just the Star Trek Yoda. Nah. I think they should make.
I don't
a
think
movie
we should do him.
Yeah, oh, that'd be funny.
Absolutely. Well, Dave, where's our music provided by?
Our music is provided by Warp 11. Warp 11 actually was just at the Star Trek 50th anniversary convention, and I think in San Francisco. I think I'm bad with cities in California, but I want to say it was San Francisco.
Well, they're from Sacramento, so they're right around. I mean, Sacramento, so they're right around the corner from that.
Right around the corner. So, you know, Warp 11, they are amazing. They let us use their music for our show. Please go support them, buy their latest album, Rock Out with Your Smock On. Go follow them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. They're at Warp 11 on Facebook. I mean, on Twitter, and, you know, just type in Warp 11, they'll come up and you can see all the photos. They actually have to share the stage with William Shatner.
That's awesome.
At the con. So, I don't know if they sang Jerk My Kirk for him, just to, you know, and it's really funny.
Sounds like something Shatner would get into. Yeah, do that.
It's like, yeah, that's awesome. No, but it's just they have some great pictures of them meeting some of the cast members that they've been sharing on their Warp 11 Facebook page. So go check them out. Go like them. Go check out their pictures of them seeing the Star Trek cast. Support them. Buy their albums. They do great work. They're hilarious. They're funny.
Very funny.
And
off the wall.
Yeah, and I definitely want to have them back on to talk so they can tell us about that convention and what happened with Shatner and everything. I think that'll be fun.
Yeah.
So maybe that'll be a preview of what's to come in 2017. But follow them online. If you think we're worth a dollar, you can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/synthaholics.
Where's a buck? What's a buck? A buck a month. Yeah. A buck a month. If you think this show's fun to listen to, if we entertain you slightly on your commute to work, on your daily grind of while you're typing some stupid report for your stupid boss that you freaking hate.
Those damn TPS reports.
If you hate them and we lighten your day just slightly, you know, throw us a buck. Or, hey, even better, tell a friend.
Tell a friend. And or review us on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, anything that we are on. Google Play Music. We are everywhere where you can find your podcasts.
We're everywhere. We're right outside your window. Don't look. We're there.
You might say we're peeping Synthaholics, but, you know, we're just there for you. We're there to egg you on and support you.
Like, yeah, jerk your Kirk.
Jerk it hard.
You heard it here first, jerk it hard.
Yeah. But, you know, also, Guy, you can support him at patreon.com.
Definitely.
Save Us Art.
Tamberlin's awesome. Witches of Flame is
amazing.
He's just really getting started with that, so we're getting the whole narrative of, like, where his characters are coming from.
Oh, so. Yeah. So, I mean, it's easy. I mean, Witches of Flame is brand new, so it's really easy to jump into because he releases, basically a panel a week.
Yeah, and we're basically 7 pages in, so it's not like you're going to be, like, have a lot to read. So if you want to pick that up and start reading that, great. Also, he's doing his USS Tamberlin story.
Which has been doing for years. So it's amazing ongoing comic featuring a Saladin class
destroyer. Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Awesome. The USS Tamberlin. So worth checking out. And, you know, if you have some money, throw his way. He is an artist. He can use any kind of funds and support.
He is not just an artist he's an artist for a living. That is his, you know, livelihood.
Oh, yeah.
And he is also a podcaster with his own podcast, and he joins us many a times on Synthaholics.
So check those out as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, we hope you have a great 2017.
We hope your 2016 was better than ours. But we were here for you the whole year.
You don't know the pain we've been through, but...
Butt surgery and all that stuff.
Surgery, loss of incomes.
Employment. We were both let go from a job the same day. We'll be having Pete Herr on in February to commemorate that with Year of Hell, Part 1 and 2.
Year of Hell.
To commemorate our...
We definitely got to talk about Year of Hell, because we had 2016 was our Year of Hell.
Yeah, so, I mean, but it started in February, so, I mean, we're going to do Year of Hell for our Year of Hell.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. That's when it really started the shit... It really shit the bed for us, you know? Yeah. It was getting there, and then it got worse, so...
Yeah, that's just when the ball started rolling.
That's when the pain really start rolling out on us.
The pain! Pain! Wait, this isn't that episode.
No, not that episode.
That episode's also amazing, Devil in the Dark.
We talked
about that, you know, weeks and weeks ago with Tricorder Transmissions.
Yes.
So check that. Go back and check that episode out, because that was another fantastic time that we got to talk with.
It's another great
another podcast.
Original series. You need to see that.
Yeah.
Well, hey, 2017. Here's for hoping.
Here's for hoping. Got our whiskey. We're going to hold on and drink.
Hold on tight.
Oh. Well, thank you all so much for listening. We, again, hope your holidays were amazing. Mm-hmm. Live long and prosper, my friends.
Please do. I have not seen anything that he's done that, you know, his hands are, that his characters aren't phenomenal. It's just he doesn't know how to end a fucking story. That's all it comes down to. Every time.
I completely agree with you about
that. Yeah, he could just plot out the whole story, figure out how the story's going to end before he gets there, and then because he's done it over and over again.
He really has.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost feels like R.L. Stein. What, from Goosebumps way back in the day in that respect?
Yeah.
You know, everything is left open for that continuation.
We got
this. Slappy. Slappy's always around for Night of the Living Dead.
I can
14.
Hear me now.
You know?
The rain is gone.
Your mic's really, really hot.
How hot is it?
It's turning me on.
Hmm.
Soundboard says 69. Weird.
I'm so glad I'm recording right now.
God damn it.
Marvelous. Man, that's great.
Oh. Lately, I haven't been on the ball with getting recording classic things like that before show, but...
How are we doing this? Is this
for Robbie's... This is Robbie's...
Nerdynomicon?
That was what I was going to ask.
This is Robbie's
stream
game.
This was going to be on.
This is yours.
Okay.
Booyah. My equipment, your stream. I'll send you the file tomorrow or something.
Beautiful. I'll shoot for a Wednesday release date next week, then.
Okay.
So, is he doing the intros?
Yes, he would be doing the intros.
Okay. You know how I always do that today on our show thing right before? So I'll start out with that. I'll do a quick cut, and then we'll do the sign-ins. And just for the record, how would you guys feel about doing something similar to this, like once a month? Like we see a movie, like, because there's a lot of fucking awesome-looking shit coming out. You know, we've got Guardians Volume 2. We've got...
Cool.
You know,
I legitimately thought about that today. Like, no joke. Probably before just I got to the theater. I was like,
Shell.
We need to figure out some sort of monthly thing.
Yeah.
To either appear on another show.
Really, really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We need monthly crossovers thing. Are great. So let's.
I mean, I've got the rest of my team with Holly, Brooke, Hobart, and Nikki from CBM. You've got your team and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this would be a lot of fun.
I think so, too.
Absolutely.
You know, one or two of us can't.
We haven't even done anything yet. How are you going to say if it's fun or not?
This might suck.
Quit counting your chickens before they hatch.
You've been on mine. Yeah, we've never all been together. But
it could just be a disaster.
Stop it.
We all start punching each other.
The beer win.
I'm. You know, I was giving you guys both pessimism before, and that's not going away.
All right.